Welcome, everybody. My name is Kent Seaton, co-founder of Athletes Touch with Justin Blaine. Welcome to the Tower of Power podcast that we've got coming at you right now. We're an exclusive community helping former pro and college athletes in the business world get ready to rocket fuel your ship, professionally speaking. I'm here. Justin, go ahead and take it away.
If you like great stories, sports, and success, you're in the right place. Buckle up and join us for a great ride.
From qualifying for the Olympic trials to working at USA Swimming's headquarters and coaching at the race club, Abby has been on all sides of the sport. Come listen to Abby talk about her transition from competitive swimmer into the world of business and how to swim like a fish. Check it out.
Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us, and wanted to kind of let you tell your story and kind of introduce us, but tell us a little bit about how you started in the pool. Like, did your parents throw you in at three and say, swim?
Pretty much. I was 4 years old when I started swimming. And I started swimming essentially because my brother and my sister were swimming. And I emulated everything that they did because they are older than me. So I told my mom at the age of four that if they get to go to the swimming pool, then I should be able to too. And kind of reluctantly, my mom, you know, listening to a four-year-old, was not very enticed with that decision, but she did let me decide to start swimming. And so, yeah, I swam until the age of 25, and I've retired from something at this point in my life. But yeah, it's been a huge part of my world pretty much ever since I could remember.
Wow. Well, that's awesome. At what point did you realize that you were going to be competitive at this sport?
Honestly, I didn't really know, like, it didn't really dawn on me that I was good at swimming. I feel like in general, I'm not someone to boast about myself. I feel like I'm a very modest person, and I played a bajillion other sports through the majority of my time until high school. So it was my junior year of high school that I quit everything else that I was doing, and I just focused on swimming. But at that point, I had already like qualified for Olympic trials. And that was kind of like, I went from just being a kid that was athletic to like this kid that was like on more of a world stage. And that honestly, it was really hard. It was hard to deal with the rapid transition that I had from just like being a regular kid to someone in the swimming world that people knew about. And therefore there's a lot of pressure associated with that. And I was young, I was only 15 years old when that happened.
And what was the event, or what are the events that you swam?
I was a 200 butterflyer, and then when I went to college, they tried to like transition me into more of like a 500 yard freestyler, which I was not a huge fan of, but yeah, I did freestyle and butterfly.
Okay. And so that Olympic aspiration, explain to us, you know, because every time we turn on, we see the Olympics, you know, 1/100th of a second is deciding gold, silver, bronze. So you got into those trials. How competitive is it?
It's really competitive. So there's over 400,000 USA Swimming registered swimmers, like give or take. There's, you know, maybe a couple thousand more, a couple thousand less, depending on the year. And then out of that, only 1,200 or so will make a trials meet. And then out of the 1,200 at the trials meet, only 56 make the Olympic team. So it's like 0.00000, like four that you have the chance of making the Olympic team.
And so the difference between the 1,200 going to the 56 is, you know, split seconds, correct?
Yeah. And it's crazy. I mean, you have to perform in the morning one day, and then they'll take top 16 out of those results. And then out of the top 16, you swim again, to which they take top 8. And then out of the top 8 is where they take the top 2. So you're swimming 3 times at your best speed to try to make the Olympic team.
Wow. So talk to us about life after swimming. Your transition and what you're doing now? And
yeah, so I started my own business over a year and a half ago. And basically, so I'm a swim coach, and I virtually coach swimmers all over the world through my house. So it's been it sounds like a very easy transition from when I was swimming to doing what I'm doing now. But I've actually hopped through a lot of jobs through my 20s. And looking back, everything makes sense. But as I was going forward, nothing seemed to make sense. I just knew that I liked swimming, and there was pieces that made sense to like move and continue down this path. But I had no idea I would be a business owner at the age of 30. I didn't study marketing. I didn't study business in college. Everything that I've learned is stuff that I've either been taught.
So how do you virtually coach somebody on their swimming? Is it the mindset, or is it technique, or is it all of it?
Yeah, so I specialize in swimming stroke technique. So I have a master's with an emphasis in biomechanics, and I worked out at USA Swimming at the Olympic Training Center right when I finished swimming. I got an internship, and that is where I kind of consider like the birthplace of me really enjoying the technical side of the sport. Like golf is a great example that you can be, you know, training for golf, but you have someone you send a video to of your golf swing and they improve your technique there to improve how far you can hit the ball. They've been doing this for years, but with swimming, technology has been very behind just with the water medium, and it's not really easy to get Bluetooth to communicate through water and all that jazz. So we're just further behind in other sports when it comes to implementing different pieces of technology. And so I've kind of like put myself into this like niche over here where we're utilizing cameras or utilizing sensors or different things to test swimmers. And then from there, giving them feedback on how to get faster through the water.
So yeah, I was going to kind of ask that. So how do you measure that impact? Is it all based on just time?
Time, and then you can also measure like pressure, you can measure force, depending on what you're looking at. You can also measure a swimmer's speed. So everything can turn out to be very science-oriented, depending on whatever system you're using. And I'm very math and science brained. So for me, numbers make a lot of sense. So when I talk about swimming, I don't necessarily talk about, I guess, more of the artistic side, or like, it looks like this. I like to say it looks like this because of this. So here's your why, and take your why, and let's figure out how to either reduce it, or we want to make that number higher. Like, what can we do to actually manipulate those numbers to give you a better time at the end?
Okay. And so in that business model, like, what are the types of hurdles, or what things stand in your way of being more successful and growing your business to being the top swim coach in the world?
Yeah. So, I mean, I would say personally, I'm a huge perfectionist. And so with working online and virtually, part of me is like, oh my gosh, my cat is up from her nap and now this looks really unprofessional. And that could be totally, you know, in the back of my brain and affecting me to really like communicate well with you guys and affect my confidence. So I think one thing for me has really been, you have to put yourself out there and you have to be okay with failing, which sports do teach you. But at the same time, when you're doing it without what you're normally used to and you're in a different medium or a different environment, it can still be really scary. So for me, it was just a matter of understanding that, like, yeah, I'm young, but I feel like I have something to say. And when I have something to say, I hope people respect that and they want to hear it. And if I keep doing it, I'll get better at it. And over time, you know, maybe my cat won't be up from her nap during an interview and all that jazz.
Do you have a golden rule that you talk or teach your people in life or in your coaching or teaching?
Yeah, so this is one thing that I've really been working on recently, just is personal integrity. And because I'm steering the ship and I have a team of seven that I'm working with and all that jazz, I just feel like I want to be very direct with my word and mean what I say and kind of do as I say. So I very much hold myself to a high level of accountability and just wanting to be a good role model for everyone that I'm coaching, the parents that I'm talking to, and also my team. So yeah, just having a high level of integrity is one of the biggest things for me right now.
That's awesome. And then are there any misconceptions in the swimming world or things that, you know, we might think that you would say, hey, this is a misconception that people always get at?
I think especially like within the social media age, and as I was saying before, I've been putting myself out there and working online for over 5 years now. So I used to partner with a different sports performance company before I started my own. And I worked for them for 3 years. And so my face is all over social media. There's a lot of swimming stuff. There's Abby Fish this, Abby Fish that. And it's cool. But at the same time, for like the younger generation that really looks at that as like a social status, it's a huge misconception that my life is like this glamorous lifestyle of a swim coach and all that jazz. So yeah, I do work from home and I do get to travel the world and it's awesome, but I am like by no means any sort of like celebrity or like legitimate celebrity that you see that like creates art or music. And that's something that I deal with my younger kids. They're like, my swim coach is famous. And I'm like, nah, pretty sure I'm not. Pretty sure that's not a thing.
Okay, well, that's great. So, I mean, what type of techniques or things, like what is a technique you would teach somebody or a competitive swimmer in high school? Like, are we talking to, you know, can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, just generally, as some of us aren't very knowledgeable in the swimming world.
Yeah. So swimming is such a weird sport for the fact that, like, even if you haven't swam, I hope that everyone on this call is at least water safe, that you can get in the pool or a bathtub, or you can take your feet off the ground of a pool and you're comfortable. Cause that's a huge part with being in the US. I worked over in Australia for a while and everybody there knows how to swim cause it's just much more involved in their lifestyle. It's all really huge coastal towns in Australia. Where we have, like I live in Kentucky, all we have is lakes here. We're not near an ocean or any sort of big body of water. So when you put someone in the pool, obviously you want them to be safe. And at the same time, you want them to be efficient, but you're taking the body from what is normally, you know, in a vertical plane, if you're doing any sort of other sports, to a horizontal plane, and then also in a resistance medium. So it's just very different for someone to get used to swimming. And sometimes that can be quite, not only scary, but just hard for someone. So for me, one of the biggest things I'll do at the very beginning with a swimmer who maybe hasn't swam much or is looking to improve is look at more of the body line. How does the body line sit in the water? Can they float well? That's a huge prerequisite foundation to having good strokes. How's their kick? If you guys have ever tried kicking with a kickboard, but you know, maybe you run like 6 to 8 miles a day, it is so completely different. And it's a great way to cross train for someone who maybe is more of a runner or a cyclist. But the muscles in your legs are just so physiologically oriented in a pool compared to on land that it's a great workout. If you want to really, you only have 30 minutes and you want to go swim and you want to kick for 15 minutes of that, all of you guys would be like, whew, all right, I'm good to go home and eat a big dinner tonight.
Yeah, absolutely.
Welcome to the intermission. Kent, who's this group for? Is it for Super Bowl champs?
Check.
How about cross-country skiers?
Check.
How about Olympic synchronized swimmers?
Triple check.
So it sounds like anybody who has an athlete's mindset or mentality could qualify here.
Quadruple check, Justin. This group is a rocket fuel powered community for former athletes to use their state of mind to succeed in the sport of business.
So what about more experienced swimmer? Let's say you have a high school, somebody's got a high school swimmer that's, you know, right a second away from, you know, breaking that record at their high school. What is the technique you're teaching?
Yeah, so there's a really big, if we want to get super technical, there's a really big wave in the swimming world, especially within the freestyle stroke, that's more of like a galloping stroke, and they get that from more of like a horse's gallop. So there's like a almost like a limp or like a Nemo fin happening within the stroke. So it's really a short arm mixed with a long arm. So one arm pulls a little bit less than the other one, which allows you to cycle through the tempo quicker and get the tempo higher for a longer period of time. It's a lot harder to do than what it sounds like because you're always having one short and one long, and then you're breathing to the short one. But that is a technique that's out there that fits some people based off their goals, and other people it doesn't make sense to do.
Well, that's fascinating. What are some groups that you belong to, and how are you getting your name out there and acquiring new clients?
Yeah, so a lot of the stuff that I do is within organic marketing. I do some paid marketing like Facebook ads and things for the business and Instagram ads through social. But for me, I also coach a local club team in Louisville. So I have a bunch of parents and young kids that I coach regularly as well, which it doesn't really matter what kind of business you run. Word of mouth recommendations always work better than trying to market someone through their cell phone who's never met you before. So I do definitely try to do a really good job of fostering great relationships with the people that I see on a daily basis. But like larger groups within the swimming world, I belong to the American Swim Coaches Association. I talked at the World Aquatic Health Conference this year. I have a very big presence in swimming in Australia and also Malaysia and some of the Asian countries. So for me, I really just work with different federations. And within that, obviously, that's the audience base that I'd like to talk to and help. And so I just try to give back through that.
That's fantastic. some of the Olympics in the past, you've seen these people in the full head-to-toe neoprene suits, and then they go back to the Speedo. And so talk to us about, does technology change? Like, why all of a sudden does somebody show up in a full suit?
Yes. So the Australians are actually the ones that you can blame for those. They invented them based off the fact that they were used for body surfing. And it's true that they essentially increase your buoyancy in the water. So it wasn't a bad thing. It just was like world records that had been like standing for over 20 years were getting broken in these suits. And FINA, the governing body of pretty much everybody and everything, was like, well, I don't know how much faster we can get if we're having these world records broken by not just a little bit, but by like seconds. So they were stressed that if they started allowing the suit or that type of suit to continue to improve, then the reality of how much a swimmer had to do would be diminished, because the suit is like essentially not like cheating, but it was helping them swim faster by doing less as a swimmer.
You know, along those lines and performance enhancing, I mean, are drugs big in the swimming world?
Yeah, so that's really been, I mean, I feel like in the news, doping has been a huge thing since like the 2014 Winter Games, and also the 2012 Games through all sports. And also, you know, like it's within cycling, not just within swimming. So yeah, it's definitely an issue. It's way bigger of an issue than I think like the singular kind of select situations that people have been pointing out say. So yeah, it's not going to be an easy fix when it's like you go up the pipeline and it's just bigger than just the person. It's more like involved in their governing body, and then maybe within federations, and there's money. When there's money, that means there's power and all that jazz. So yeah, I hope it gets better. I obviously don't want anyone to be cheating, but yeah, I know that that situation is way bigger than what we see in the news.
Sure. Will we ever see another Michael Phelps in our generation or in the next, a guy that can win that many gold medals and compete for that long in swimming?
I mean, Mark Spitz was what, like 30, 40 years ago. So like there's a chance, but the reality is probably not. I'd like to say, I hope so. Just because I'd like to say that, you know, it's good for someone to always aspire to be the best, but you always want to say that someone can elevate the sport even that much more. So give them something to shoot for. But I'm so thankful for Michael and how much he's done for the sport of swimming. Cause as I said before, a lot of people like swimming, or, you know, they don't really have like a bias against swimming, but it's not like you would spend your Saturday going to a swim meet. So with that, if you don't have people that are interested in it, there's not a lot of money and funding. So when I stopped swimming and retired after I swam at the University of Georgia, there really was no like next steps. It was like, if you want to keep swimming, you can, but then you got to get a job and figure out how to be an adult and then also keep training and then pay for all this food that you're eating. Like, how do you do all that? So it was just a lot harder. And now there's way more opportunities because Michael has made swimming more mainstream and more people seem to care about it and get excited about it, which just helps continue to grow this bubble of a sport.
That's great. Do we have any questions from anybody?
Yeah, congratulations on everything. Very, very inspiring. Are there anything in the works or any ways to make swimming more commercially viable, to make it to increase the popularity? So then, you know, so unfortunately, generally people go where the TV money goes or the, yeah, where the popularity, yeah, goes. Is there something to do to make it a little bit more enticing for the commercial market?
Yeah. So there's been a few companies that were trying to figure out how to get streaming rights to different meets, which I thought was kind of an interesting idea. But NBC has obviously the Olympics on lockdown, and then ESPN has the NCAAs on lockdown. So then you're looking for more like singular meets, or like I coach just a club team here. There was just a lot of hoops and ladders to jump through with that. And the company that is coming to mind was Flow Swimming. And they tried to do it for 3 years and they just didn't get enough of an audience base to want to pay for that subscription to be able to see the neat streams. So I do think that's still a good thing. It's just maybe that the way that they were going about it or their model wasn't something that was, I mean, obviously successful. USA Swimming did pass that you can drink beer in the stands of a swim meet now in hopes that it would entice people to come to swim meets.
But tennis was really behind. So on the analytics, you were talking about, because Chip asked the question about in terms of how you could help, and you know, it, swimming is a very technical sport. One of the things, tennis was super behind, and I don't know who made the joke about baseball and the pitcher, how big of a debacle that was the other night with them taking him out, and how analytics has even gotten too pervasive. But in terms of a sport like swimming, maybe there's a commercial component, because I know, because I did it with tennis, we're bringing the analytics company, bringing SAP, you know, SAP and Oracle always like battle each other. Those are the two behemoths in the analytics world, and they both spend a ton of money in sports to reach their consumer. Their whole thing and their whole pitch was, you know, about using content and information. And I pitched it and I sold it to the women's tennis about how to use information to help sell it. And they make the connection in their corporate world. So maybe there's some way to get some funding with one of those type of companies.
Yeah, I would say that most swimmers, I mean, if you're into swimming, you understand like the minute differences that, you know, take between first and second or first and sixth place. So if there was a way to, I don't know, bring that more to somebody else, or like have the basic person who doesn't understand swimming understand that, that would be huge.
That's the whole thing. Using the information to tell the story, like that's the whole kind of premise of what it was. It's like a big part of the Olympics is telling the story of the people, but a big part of the sport is actually talking about the uniqueness of the sport as in terms of, you know, how the technique breaks out into those milliseconds that are the difference between, you know, winning a gold medal and nobody's ever heard of you, unfortunately. Those small differences.
So when I swam for my ribbons, we had somebody's eye watching the wall, and now it's adapted where you have these panels for the split second. Did you swim in both environments, or were you only always on the panels?
Pretty much through most of my swimming career, I had the touch pads is the technical term. For country club swim meets, or even just like not USA swimming sanctioned meets, I would do just a regular stopwatch, or someone would physically look. Obviously, they invented touch pads because there's a couple Olympic games where people were screaming from the stands that someone actually touched before the other person, but there was no video review and there was no way to prove it. So they just went by what was on the stopwatch. But there's a couple cool companies now that have created essentially your cell phone being a stopwatch. So it takes away all the like extra wiring and things, because you do have to have two times for every swimmer if you're doing stopwatches, and then you take the average of the two. So it just takes away some equipment and allows you to Bluetooth send results, and it just makes it a lot faster than if you're handwriting things down and then someone has to tally all that up to then post it for the parents to see. It just streamlines that process.
And I'm assuming you would prefer the touchpad.
Oh, 100%. Although touchpads, I mean, if anyone watched the 2008 Olympic Games and you remember that swim where Michael touched out Milorad Kavik by like 0.01, people claim that they think that the touchpad either didn't register with him, or they think Michael had this like crazy iconic finish. It just depends on like which clickbait article you look at. But it is debatable. If you don't touch it with enough pressure, does it not register? And we'll never know.
Yeah. Abby, how can we support you? What are you looking for? Is there anything that we can be doing for you?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, for me, brand awareness and understanding, because I made the transition from working out of Ritter to owning my own business called Swim Like a Fish. If you guys could just, I mean, tell people, if you want to post about it, that would be awesome. I'm always looking for people's reviews and just also general thoughts and what they think is happening. If they like an article, they like a video. So any type of sharing would be amazing. I always try to keep up with that and make sure that I'm in the weeds there too, knowing what's happening to keep people on a positive note.
Awesome. Abby, thank you so much for joining us. We really, really appreciate you coming and joining us and your time.
Another great story in the books. Who's inspired with me? Kent, where do people go from here?
God, Justin, I'm so glad you asked me that question. Everybody today, we're so excited to have you on the show. If you're interested in our Rocket Fuel Accelerator, if you'd like to join membership at Athletes Touch, go to our awesome website at www.athletestouch.co, and we'll see you soon. If you want to look us up on our social handles, LinkedIn and Twitter, Athletes Touch, @Athletes Touch. Thanks, guys.